Well, in the first half, comedian Darren Carter's going to hang with us. Funny guy. We'll eulogize Robbie Knievel and Lisa Marie Presley. Take some angles on that. You'll enjoy lots of good stuff. And we'll do that right after this.
We're back inside the toolbox. We've awakened from a brief winter slumber. Got the window cracked to feel the cold air on your face. Yeah, crack it a little more. Feels good, right? Feels like possibility. There's an old Chinese curse that says, may you live in interesting times, while we certainly do. I'd like to read to you from the book of Bill S. Preston, Esquire, and Ted Theodore Logan, who once said, the world is full of history. That's right. So remember yours. Remember that what you do today will be your history tomorrow, so you better make it count. Bill and Ted went on to say that the place to be is here. The time to be is now. I'll editorialize and remind you to simply be. Have a heart of gold, a mind of steel, and the eye of the tiger, right here on the Toolbox.
Rising up, back on the street. Did my time, took my chances. Went the distance, now I'm back on my feet. Just a man and his will to survive. So...
From Corolla One Studios in Glendale, California, this is The Adam Carolla Show. Adam's guest today, comedian Darren Carter, and from Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Nick Blood. And now, whip five on yourself, Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get on. Our choice, we've got our mandate. You get it on. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for telling a friend. Love that about you. Comedian Darren Carter in studio. Good to see you, Darren.
Good to see you, Adam.
Got many questions for you. Max Pata's over there as well. So, Darren, oh, God, where do we start? We'll get to know you for a minute, and then we'll get into some notable deaths of some icons from the 70s. I think you probably know what I'm talking about. Did you grow up in foster care?
I did. I grew up in Fresno, so that makes it worse.
Yeah.
Fresno, yeah. Foster care.
You want like Monterey foster care.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Carmel.
Carmel.
Yeah, that's
foster
what you want.
Care.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You don't want
foster.
Fresno. Yeah, you don't want Fresno. You're like,
no.
You're, yeah, born and then like 3 miles away. That's your foster home, that pink house with the black bars on it. That's,
What age were you when you entered the system?
3 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And on some aspects, I guess I was lucky because it was the same home until I left. And
until 18?
Yeah, about 19, because I needed to save money to get out, you know. But yeah, I was to get out, to break free of that of prison. But yeah, it was I was 3, and then they adopted me at 9.
Oh, so it wasn't a thing. Some foster families have kids like part-time, some do multiple kids, and then some just adopt the kid.
There was 4 kids that were like permanent, I guess. But then when I was 7, my oldest brother, I guess you'd call him, he moved out. So then it was just me and my 2 sisters, and they were biologically related. They were Native Americans.
Mm-hmm.
And then there'd be occasionally like other kids coming in and out. But I think there was too much trouble with that. And they were like, okay, let's not do that. Let's just keep it with the.
So you were given up by your mom, your parents.
Yeah. Which it's a, you know, I'm knock on wood. I'm really lucky with that. I didn't really know my father, and we can get into that a little bit later, but I didn't know him until I was in my 30s.
Mm-hmm.
But I always maintained a relationship with my biological grandparents. So I would see my grandma and grandpa like every other weekend until I was 9. And then once I got adopted, they kind of put that, you know, the kibosh on that. And then I would see them, you know, Christmas, birthday, that kind of
thing. What about your mom?
Yeah. She was, she used to run with the Hells Angels, and that's who my dad was. And she was in prison and would be in and out of prison. And then I got to see her a couple times when I was 23.
Is it all drugs?
I think I asked my grandpa about that, and he said, you know, it's, you know, when I was young, they were like, oh, she's a, you know, it was a shoplifting. But then I asked my grandfather about that once, and he said, you know, once you're in that system, it's like things kind of, you know, you're hanging out with someone that's a felon. Boom. You guys both get busted and you're back in, you know, so. But I don't know. I really don't know the real answer.
Is she around now?
She passed away, and she died in prison. And that's the day I said,
"Wow."
That's the I know. That's the day I decided. Okay, you know how you have that thing that you're like, one day I'll deal with this. I'm like, I'm going to look up my real dad. I know he's. I knew he was in the phone book in Fresno, and I'm like, I'm gonna. This is before like, you know, social media and all this kind of stuff. I'm like, let me just look him up, and he was a, you know, he was a Hell's Angel. He was the president of the Fresno chapter back in the day, and he had a personalized license plate, and he drove a, I want to say, a, you know about cars, so it'd be a, is it a 1946 Chevrolet Starline or something like that?
A van?
No, it was a car. It was like a cool, like, car, but he drove this car that really stood out in Fresno with the personalized light, and plus he was, you know, 6'4", and people kind of knew him, and, you know, so they'd say, hey, I saw your real dad. I saw your dad, you know, and so I said, I knew he was still in town, and I looked him up on the phone book, and I saw the name. It said E. Ray. And I'm like, wow. I was very nervous. And I remember asking my mother-in-law, I said, I'm nervous to call. And she goes, well, if he doesn't want to know you, it's his loss. You're a great guy. And you know, she really gave me the good pep talk. And I remember I called the phone number, and it was a landline. And his buddy answered the phone. He's, oh, yeah, I've heard of you. Yeah. Yeah, he went to the store. He'll be right back. He'd love to hear from you. And this guy knew, like, my dad and my mom. And he's like, hey, yeah, your mom. And, yeah. And they're going back and forth. And then I talked to him on the phone. And the plan was, like, to meet the next day and have lunch. And he chose the spot. He's like, yeah, we'll grab this Mexican restaurant on Belmont. But that night I did a show. And I told him that's why I was in town. I was a comedian. I was, you know. Uh-huh. And I'm on stage. And there's, like, you know, most of the audience is in their 20s and 30s and maybe 40s. And I look over, and there's these two ZZ Top-looking biker guys, and I go to make a quick joke about them, and then it just hit me, because you see the resemblance, and you're like, holy cow, wow. That's my dad. And then it just, yeah, man, it freaked me out for a second.
You met him doing crowd work?
Yes. Yeah.
I love my women like I like my dad. Oh, my God, dad. Yeah. Did you guys do the lunch?
We did. We did the lunch. I met him after the show. Like, everybody leaves, and I was, like, still nervous to go out there. Like, man, that's, like, this is weird. Like, and then his friend came back to the back of the club, because that's where the restrooms were. And he's like, oh, he's out there waiting for you. You should go meet him. And, you know, it's kind of like, you know, you're meeting a biker. But here's the thing. I also met him when he was older, calmed down, nice. I only know him one way, and that's, like, the friendly gregarious, right. You know. So he was great. He's, you know, he's very proud of his car. So we went over and showed me the car, and we talked, and yeah, and from that day forward, we, like, you know, I'd give him phone calls, and if I was in town, sometimes I'd, you know, hang out with him. A lot of it, and he'd come to my shows and stuff, but...
Has he hit you up for anything?
No, that was what I was nervous of. Like, the first, you know, the first 6 months, you don't know, like, you know, and...
Yeah.
And God rest his soul, he passed away last summer, but he was really, really nice, to me, you know, and... He never hit me up or anything. Yeah, he said, because I didn't know what to call him either. Cause
right.
You know,
yeah.
He's like, call me Pops, you know.
So, oh, that works.
Yeah, yeah. I would always, first off, if I saw my dad, I don't think I would see any resemblance between him and me. I don't think I would connect and go, I can see in the eyes or whatever. Yeah. I don't think my dad looks anything like me, number one. Number two, it is weird. The titles, even when my stepmom picks up the phone, I would go, I didn't know where to say, can I talk to Dad?
Yeah.
Can I talk to Jim, which is his first name? Yeah. Or what I end up doing is I go, can I talk to my dad? Which then feels weird with her.
You're possessive.
Yes. Yeah. But I don't know.
My dad.
Yeah. So there's that. And so stand up. Travel, I know, podcasts, special. Yeah.
Well, I have a question once again about the foster home.
Please do.
So some of my favorite videos to watch online are when, like, kids in foster homes are asked to be adopted. Like, there's, like, a ceremony, like, either they
that'll make
a Christmas present. It's like, hey, we want to adopt you or anything. Did that happen with you? Was there, like, a
special I didn't want to be adopted, but I just kind of went in along with it. You know, you're like, I wanted to go back to my real grandparents, and I wanted to go back. That's what I really wanted, you know? And they live, like I said, that's what I wanted. You know, my foster parents, very strict, very religious, church, Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night. It's tough, you know? I mean, there was definitely some positives, you know, but it wasn't like, you know,
Can you say no, right? if they ask to adopt you, you can say, I don't want this.
Oh, I don't know. Not when you're nine.
I'm good.
I'm cool. I'm cool.
I got
let
this.
Me, let me open a juice box and think about it.
Exactly. It's like a relationship. You know, you got to court me longer.
Yeah.
You know?
I'm not ready yet.
I'm going to pop a juice box, get on my big wheel, go for a ride, and do some soul searching.
I need the wind in my hair for a little bit.
Well, speaking of, I was funny. I was thinking about this. I have my sort of way to measure a decent childhood from a bad childhood. And it made me think about it today because I woke up this morning and I found out that Robbie Knievel had passed right on the heels of Lisa Marie Presley passing. And then I had a couple of thoughts. One is Elvis, and I don't know that we'll ever have this ever again. Elvis and Evel Knievel were just two of the biggest icons of this nation, the world, the 70s, the most recognizable people on the planet, where everyone is too sort of scattered now. You watch this show, I don't watch that show, I don't know who this is. I mean, you know, you watch the Golden Globes, I don't know who half the people who are presenting or in the audience are, but there was a day when this nation was united on Evel Knievel and Elvis Presley. And then I started thinking, they're similar. They both had fantastic hair. They both wore the jumpsuit, the red, white, and blue jumpsuit.
Capes.
They had the cape and the jumpsuit. I think Evel started it, and I think Elvis may have ripped off Evel with the kind of red, white, and blue leather jumpsuit cape look, because his cape in jumpsuit were very reminiscent of Evel's. Evel probably started in the early 70s and Elvis probably in the later or midder 70s. Midder earlier. it was close.
Yeah.
And then I started thinking Evel and Elvis, they have like three of the same letters.
Oh, wow.
Even. This is Elvis and Evel. I'm guessing.
Wow.
But who came first in the jumpsuit and cape department?
That's true.
Yeah,
and then
similar.
I started thinking, man, both their kids gone, and there could be no more bigger shoes to fill than Evel Knievel and Elvis Presley. But, you know, here's the deal. I didn't think about this one until 10 seconds ago. When your dad is Evel Knievel, and you're a dude, you're Robbie Knievel, you got to go out and jump a bike. You got to go break some bones.
Yeah.
I mean, Robbie Knievel probably traveled in the air further than Evel did. Now, that's technology. He's got a bike with a monoshock and some travel in it. And those, you know, the newer fangled dirt bikes, you can sail.
Well, you're right. So Robbie, he was jumping his bike at 4 years old and first performing at Evel's show at Madison Square Garden when he was 8.
Wow.
Right. So when you're a dude and your dad jumps motorcycles, and you better fucking go do the scariest thing in the world. When you're the daughter of the king, you're like, I'll just get married a shitload of times and slam some drugs and write a tell-all at some point. Like, I don't have to leave the house. I'm not going to break my ribs. It's so much more pressure.
I know.
Poor Sonny.
And then also, there's no... That's my son. There's no... My daughter. What I'm saying is if... There's a societal pressure. Everyone always talks about the double standard. But if Robbie Knievel just said, I'm not working, I'm just getting married a bunch of times and doing drugs, he would be a pariah.
Right.
He's got to go fucking, he's got to go make some hay while the sun is shining. Yeah, but when the daughter does it, if she says, I'm going to get a job, people go, no, sweetie. You own Graceland and you own the rights to and the likeness and image. You're like, don't be stupid and get a job. Just marry Nick Cage or Michael Jackson or something like that.
Yeah, LeBron's son is kind of doing that, right? He's on a path to becoming an NBA player now. And LeBron said, my final wish in my career is to just be on the court with him before I'm off.
Right. I don't know if he has a daughter, LeBron, but she just needs to marry a celebrity. She can go out and have the greatest career in the world, but from a societal pressure standpoint, she will not be judged for marrying a celebrity.
That's true. Whenever I would go to the boxing gym, I'd see like the fathers bringing in their sons, like professional boxers. And I'm like, man, that kid has to box. He can't be like, you know, I'll just be over here in my phone. No, no, no. You're going to get in there.
So Joe Frazier's son, Marvis Frazier, was like forced into the heavyweight division as like an undersized heavyweight and just got destroyed. I think Larry Holmes. I think Larry Holmes fought him. We can figure it out. It's a bad sign when the guy you're fighting in between sticking jabs in your orbital socket is using his free hand to wave the ref over to go, look, I got two hands. One,
on,
I'm going to use to pummel this guy's son.
Oh, wow.
The other is you should come in here and put an end to this massacre, or I'm just going to hang back. I'm going to use my free hand to talk to the ref. I think that was Larry Holmes and Marvis Frazier, but we can figure that one out. Anyway, yeah, they fought in 1983. Joe Frazier probably had a daughter who just got married to someone based on being Joe Frazier's daughter.
See, it's all perspective. Those guys are probably like, I wish I was adopted.
Speaking of your childhood, good or bad, as I was thinking about Elvis and I started thinking about Evel Knievel, the hottest toy of 1975 was the Evel Knievel wind-up sky cycle thing.
Yeah.
You put little miniature bike with Evel Knievel, and it had like a centrifugal wheel in it. You'd wind it, and this crank thing, wind it as fast as it go, and then stop, and the thing would take off. And it would do jumps, and, you know, it was all those Wham-O commercials or Mattel commercials from the 70s where it's like two white kids in a cool house with a nice driveway going, go, Evel, And they, you know, they'd have a cutting board up on a block, and they'd jump, you know, and his cape and everything. And I never had one of those because that would have been, like, at the time, $13, which would have been like $31 of today's dollars, which was way out of, you know, way out of bounds for my family's income bracket. But then so the way I judge this, and you tell me, you were in foster care. A good childhood is Levi's versus Tough Skins.
I had Tough Skins. Okay, I'm going to give the answer. Well, I had Tough Skins. Screw it. I got Levi's later, though. 501 jeans, right?
Huffy versus Schwinn. In the bike department, and now I'm adding Evel Sky Cycle on there. If you had, if you said to me, my father ritualistically abused me physically, mentally, and sexually, and I said to you, but did you have Levi's, a Schwinn, and a Sky Cycle? If you said yes, I'd go, you still had a better childhood than me. Did you have the Sky? You're too young for the Sky Cycle.
I didn't have the Sky Cycle, but I have friends that have it now. You know, like you go to their place,
ironically,
have their office, or they have their, you know, their bedroom or something.
You're that sounds like an awesome toy now.
Yeah, I've seen it now. It's where I'm like, that's so cool. And they're like, remember this? And I don't remember.
It's very ironic 70s stuff, kind of like a, you know, Archie's lunch pail or something.
I remember pretending to be Evel Knievel. Like we'd be on our bikes and you'd like make the little ramp off the curb and you know.
Right.
Yeah.
Do we have that commercial? What year was that? 76, 77? Evel's.
First issue, Stunt Cycle.
It's funny. Evel, Elvis, and Levi all have a lot of same
numbers. This is Evel Knievel and the Evel Knievel shock-absorbing Stunt Cycle.
Wow.
You can make him do wheelies, backstands, even mid-air somersaults. And for that big jump, here's Evel, up and over that four-foot ditch.
This is a great commercial. This is awesome.
Evel Knievel, sold separately or with the Evel Knievel Stunt Cycle from Ideal.
Evel made $1 billion off of this, and then he beat that reporter with a baseball bat. And then Mattel was like, yeah, that's not part of our image.
Bat
sold separately. Reporter with caved in heads, action figure. Oh, like Evel beat the dude with a baseball bat and then got in front of the judge and be like, I'd do it again. If you let me out of here, I will get another bat and I'll beat that guy again. And they're like, well, then you should go to prison for a while.
Yeah.
And Mattel was like, maybe we'll get a little distance. Stunt Cycle, 72 to 77. They must have sold 200 billion units. Evel just hammered royalty checks. And I don't know. Could we find out, Ben, what one of those retailed for? Because it's interesting to find out what my parents thought was way too expensive.
Right.
That now might constitute a tip for an Uber driver.
Right. Yeah. I know. By the way, I just rearranged the letters in Levi's and Elvis, and it's the same letters. It's funny you said that. Like evil, and then Levi's and Elvis.
I maybe I'm getting old because of my grandfather toward the end.
I think your dyslexia is working out for you.
Yes, so it's like, but the biggest in 1974, there was nothing bigger than Levi's, Elvis, and evil.
Yep.
Maybe there's something magical about that EV kind of
the
kind
combination of letters.
Yeah, because it penetrated the zeitgeist, man. All right, so there's
that. About Elvira.
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 Ah. The Mistress of the Dark. She came around a little later, though, but that I remember. The other thing thought I had was after I was watching the Golden Globes, women, I figured out in their life, all women start off with some sort of relationship with their hair that's tough. If you look at any woman, especially of a certain age, and you show them high school pictures of them and their hair, they're always like, oh, it's so embarrassing. I didn't know what to do. Guys, not as much. They just, their hair is kind of their hair, but women struggle mightily with their hair. And part of the reason I think when you see a picture of a woman and you see them like when they're in the 80s and they're in their 20s and then you see them now and you go, she looks better now than she did back, 25 years ago or whatever it is. That's because her hair was all fucked up.
Yeah. Aquanet.
And 1989. Yeah. And you think she looks better. It's really just the hair's a fucking mess. And then I realized when I was watching the Golden Globes and you see all these aging starlets, you're like, they all have their hair down perfectly now. It doesn't matter how old they are. The coloring is right. The cut is there. The hair is perfect, but their face has left the building. Like, their face is fucked up. So it's like they spend the first half of their life with a good working face and fucked up hair, and then some point they settle the hair and the face starts to go, and there's like a 6-year period in the middle where they got the hair and the face is working.
Yeah.
That's when they're in their prime.
You said left the building, Elvis. You know,
I was on to Elvis. Yeah. That was intentional.
Yeah. You don't really see any of the old lady hairstyles anymore. Like, everyone's just leaning into just the long hair. When I was growing up, every woman over 50 just went, I'm going short. I'm going short hair. Yep. Maybe the curls.
Oh, and then when we were young, you had like the Tweety Bird's mom or like the Aunt Bee with the beehive. Like,
yeah,
you had
every
old lady.
Every woman at church had the same hair growing up.
An episode of Love Boat from 1980 and every woman over the age of 46, maybe even 40, but like 45, just had old lady,
the old lady
Marion Ross from Happy Days, kind of.
They just lean in. It's like, okay, this is what I'm going to do for the rest of my life.
Well, there's no more, you're 50 years old. You have to have old lady hair. There's no more skinny jeans. There's no, you can't talk like a 19-year-old. We've thrown that out. Everyone is the same age now.
Yeah.
The other thing we wanted to get into, which a couple of days old, was that whole M&M's article, which I think Dawson has somewhere. So I have a thought. So M&M's is, doing their female power M&M's and their
yeah. Well, remember a few months ago, they released like new character looks.
The stunt cycle listed for $9.99. In 1973, so bridge too far for the Corollas.
Yeah,
$9.99.
Yeah, sorry, $125 million.
Jeez,
and evil must have got 50 cents or a buck off of every fucking unit back then. Jesus Christ,
that's how much the company made.
Oh, that's how much the company made. Oh, $125 million.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right. So, sorry, what were we talking about? M&M?
M&M's, yeah. So, a few months ago, they released, like, oh, our characters are getting new looks. Like, we're losing the boots off this this M&M, and we're trying to make them a little more fun, a little more casual maybe. And then now they came out with a new package and a new version of them.
Oh, yeah. Like they're all women, right? And I think two of them are lesbians as well.
It looks like it. I mean, yeah. I don't know if they've confirmed. I mean, they're just sitting next to each other looking longingly into each other's eyes. So it's kind of implied, but it's the women M&Ms, and they're like the package, they're turned upside down. So like the M&Ms is written one way, and then they're the other way. And it's like meant to empower, like to show all the women who've turned things upside down and make things work for them. Like it's
Dawson has the article somewhere.
Yeah, Mars to offer all female M&Ms for limited time to honor successful women all over the world. M&Ms creator Mars will release the all female M&Ms candy for women who are flipping the status quo. The company announced the feminist forward candy wrappers Thursday, saying it will exclusively display M&M's female characters.
Couple things. How long are we going to ride this? Women, you need to step up and fight for your right for a seat at the table. Mm. I know it's an Oprah, Michelle Obama sack of shit, but what I'm saying is it's 2023. Most women I know are leading much better lives than me. Number one,
they're more successful than me.
Is there some issue with them working or something, or driving an automobile?
The other day I was driving in a parking garage and I saw a woman with her hood up, and she was in there, and I was like, oh boy, because like all my past girlfriends, I've had to help with their cars, like their car problems were my car. So I'm like, man, I feel bad for her as I'm driving. And I noticed, oh no, that's a Tesla. She's just putting her groceries away in her frunk. So she has a way better car than I do. And I'm an idiot for thinking that she's having trouble with her car.
Don't tell a woman you like her frunk, because it sounds too much like gunt.
I don't like saying frunk either.
It feels marginally sexual.
Nice frunk.
Hey, babe, nice frunk.
Here's the great irony of this.
Maybe I could store my kielbasa in that frunk, huh? I bought too much kielbasa at the store. Can I drop some in your frunk?
Yeah, that doesn't sound right. You can't do that.
This series of marketing moves by the Mars company has been made to promote inclusivity.
Yep.
Not including
dudes.
Dudes.
Yeah. And also, is there something where like women are being shunned? You know what I mean? Or not included. It's a crazy narrative. And as I've said many, many times, it's all a hustle. And the reason you know it's a hustle is because Barack Obama was a two-term black president. And when he got elected, the hustlers had to ratchet up the hustle. There was much less talk about racism and systemic. We didn't even have systemic racism in 2000 or 2004 or whatever it is. Once Obama got elected, all of the fucking hustlers, which includes the media, said, oh, fuck, we got a black president. How are we going to keep this narrative going? And it's like, we got to pedal faster to keep this bullshit going. So as we get, as women make more money, as they become CEOs, as the richest, you know, you go to the Forbes, 20 most successful, and there's 11 women on there, and five of them are black, or they're all black. The point is as that goes, as reality goes, the hustlers got to fucking pedal harder to keep the string of bullshit alive. So that's why you hear more of it now than you did in 1995. So they do this thing too where they go, we've come a long way. Have we come a long way according to your race hustling ass and your misogynist ass? Like, have we come a long way? Because I was around in 1993 and no one gave a shit. People just worked together, walked around. We didn't segregate everything. We didn't bust up every award show into this group and that group. So we've come a long way from the time when we weren't talking about it all day, every day.
Yeah. The same people are saying that are also saying this is an issue that is plaguing our nation.
Yes, like, I know. Right.
The only time we've come a long way, or you've come a long way, has been true in advertisement was for Virginia Slim cigarettes.
Come a long way, baby.
Because women indeed had come a long way.
Yes.
And now you can smoke cigarettes with the men.
Yeah. That Sky Cycle, that Evel Knievel stunt cycle, the commercial was the best part of my childhood.
Commercial's on.
They'd have some knockoff to vehicle. They'd always have the vehicle horn section, and like they would always hit the horns, and then they'd show the guys, and I'd be going, "Oh man, this is such an awesome commercial! We got horns blaring in the background. We got Evil Airborne."
Were you more of a Big Wheel guy or a Green Machine?
I had, and I still don't think we can find this, but one of my prized possessions. God, I've never thought about this. I'm glad you brought this up. It's weird how the human mind works, but I always loved go-karts, mini bikes, dirt bikes, like movement, you know, and my dream, my goal when I was 9 or 10 is I wanted a Honda XR75. I wanted a dirt bike, you know, and I remember one Christmas really launching a campaign starting in like, I started like late May, you know, and I was like, "Mom, if I could get that bike, you know, it would teach me responsibility," and it would teach, and I kept going, and I just remember I was relentless with a Honda XR75, like from, you know, 1976 or something. I just went and I would sit in my room and plan. If I got it, I would build like a under subterranean garage in my backyard. I'd dig a hole and I'd put a plywood above it or something. I obsessive. Like, so I was mechanically obsessed, And it's a gene. It's just a thing. It's just, I love rims. I love tires. I love everything mechanical. I'm obsessed with mechanics. I always was. And, but I was tortured because no one in my family liked it, had any garage or tools or cars or any, at least your biker dad had a car he loved, you know, not my stupid dad. He didn't have any car.
So this is kind of foreign to them. Like, why are you interested in stuff like this?
It was like, I would imagine being gay at age 9 and looking around. And, you know, going, "Oh, maybe Susie will ask you to the Sadie Hawkins dance." And I was like, "I don't want that. What's wrong with me? What's wrong with that? I don't want that." Yeah. And everyone was showing you pictures of their girlfriend. And I was like, I like you, dude, not her. Like, and they go, "Isn't it awesome? I'm going to ask her to go steady or something." And I was like, So that's who I was with mechanical shit.
How did you do it at the house? Were there tools, like any kind of tools, screwdrivers, anything? You just start tightening light sockets?
No, if I got something like a pull and play or something, the cow says moo, I would start taking it apart to see what was inside of it. But I didn't have any tools, no garages, and my dad is, without going into 20-minute dissertation, just the lamest. If Stephen Hawking was your dad, you'd have more tools and more time in the driveway working on a car. He didn't know that was a low blow, Adam. Yeah, sorry, Stephen, but we could pop the hood on the frunk. He didn't.
Nice callback.
He did not know anything and was not interested and didn't own a. I used to have to use a butter knife as a slot head screwdriver because we didn't have anyway. So, Big Wheel, and you can look, Ben, is there a commercial for something called the Chopperoo? So here's my deal. I wanted mechanical, and go-karts and mini bikes and anything. It was all, I wasn't getting the Evel Knievel bike, much less a go-kart or a mini bike or a Honda XR75 or any, I mean, Ben, I don't know what a Honda XR75 in like 1976, whatever that retailed for, so not even a 100 million thousand.
You're not even getting the toy one. You're going to get the real one?
I know, but I had this thought that if I just launched a full like D-Day type campaign on my mom that lasted several months, maybe. Like, I always had this fantasy that like they might break protocol and just go, "Here you go, son. Like, there's a bow on it. We love you. You know, pull great. The shit." They never did. They never broke. She took it to the grave. But the point is, you do have this fantasy that it's some, you know, like the beaten woman with the alcoholic husband. Like, maybe he'll just come home sober with flowers. Like, just once, you know.
Get some hope.
But it never happened. But the Big Wheel was all the rage.
Yeah.
Now, the thing I realized about the Big Wheel is the Big Wheel was front wheel drive.
Oh, the big wheels, you're still pedaling. It's not like a power wheel. It's
No.
You pedal. You sit in a laid-back kind of chopper kind of position.
Oh, yeah.
But what I got from the big wheels, a lot of front wheel spin and chatter. I'm like, the people would be, blah, 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 and it'd just be, because the weight was shifted back.
Yeah.
Now, the chopperoo had a rear wheel chain drive with the pedals in the front, the same place. It just had a chain and rear wheels. And I'm like, I'm shifting all my weight back. My ass is over the rear wheels. And it's funny, later on, I hated front wheel drive cars because, like, my ex-wife had a front wheel drive Volvo once. And it's like when you pull down and there's some water on the ground or something and you punched it to get around the corner of traffic is coming, the weight of the car would tilt back and the front wheels would just chatter, kind of spin out a little bit. I never liked front wheel drive cars, but I didn't know. I thought this started with front wheel drive cars. It started with the big wheel versus the chopperoo. I was so mechanical that everyone's front wheel spinning out didn't feel good to me. And what it happens, you hold the handlebars, you lean back and you start pedaling. Yeah. It gets light on the front end and the wheel, which is just plastic, just chatters. But the chopperoo chain drive.
That's what the kid in The Shining was like riding around the hallways in, right?
Correct.
Was he in the big wheel?
The big wheel.
Probably
that was a big wheel. The other thing about the big wheel is the front tire that had all the traction, it was made of plastic.
So
when you're a kid and you're doing skids and sliding out trying to go really fast, what you'll end up doing is flattening a portion of that wheel.
Yeah, flat spot.
And then your big wheel is doing this the whole time.
Mm-hmm. We have the big wheel commercial. Yes. The chopperoo, I don't know. The chopperoo commercial was the chop, chop, chopperoo. That's what I remember. But I don't know that you might just be able to find a picture of it or something. Well, here's Big Wheel. Taking a walk down memory lane. That's not a Big Wheel.
It's Furious.
Yeah, what's that?
It's Chopperoo.
Oh, that's Chopperoo. Oh.
Oh, look at this
that
thing.
It really lets you move out.
Wow.
Adjust the seat, climb aboard, and go, go.
Yeah, this
go.
Is a great feat of engineering.
Yeah, here. See, the Chopperoo had chains.
And loaded
foldable
with
chair.
Chopperoo.
Now, everything's got a front.
Chopperoo.
it's still a different Chopperoo slightly than I remember. But anyway, one Christmas, I didn't get the XR75, but I did land the Chop Chop Chopperoo.
Oh, great.
Oh, that's cool.
With the chain drive.
Yeah.
And all the weight in the back. And by the way, instead of one skinny-ass tire in front, like a big wheel, two meaty slicks in the back to propel me.
And you could have gotten a big wheel after that with all the street races and stuff with your friends.
Hey, we're going for pinks.
Yeah.
It's time to check Adam's voicemail.
Adam, I think you're a genius, but I think you're sleeping on the hotel standard room. Whenever you got to deuce it up, you got to make an excuse, go down to the lobby, and use the one in the lobby. Just saying. That's what we do every time. It works every time. That's everything.
You can leave us a message at 888-634-1744.
Yeah, here's the problem, though. Well, we were talking about staying in the hotel room alone, the standard room, fine. One of your buddies, road trip, going to go see the Giants play, Giants Stadium or something, fine. King suite, fine if you're with a lady, no problem. But you're with the lady in the standard room, and you got to deuce it up. There could be an issue. Now, the issue with going down and doing the lobby one is well, first off, you got to cook something up. You can't go, I'm going to go pinch a loaf in the lobby. Yeah. You have to
take that ice bucket with you.
Yeah, take that ice bucket at 9:15 in the morning. Like, I just want to freshen up my highball. That's all. Going down to the lobby. It's but look, ostensibly, there's between 9 and 16 other dudes that have picked up the let's drop the deuce in the lobby head, and now you're all heading down after your first cup of coffee in the room. You're all heading down there with the sports page at 9:45, destroying this place.
That's true, because that's also my move, too. So I'm sure a ton of people think of that, just going to the lobby. Because lobby bathrooms have gotten a lot nicer. I don't know what it is, but yeah, the lobby bathrooms. I think hotels are on to that.
I hate when I'm in the bathroom and somebody's in there with like their phone on, and like they're in the stall and you're waiting to go in there, and they're like playing some YouTube video or something, or
you're hearing a game.
Yeah, you're in a game. You're like, dude, like just come on. You're not at home. Like, speed it up a little bit.
All right. Other things I wanted to get into was I don't know where Dawson is, but and Ben, did you have that Hank Johnson clip? Always funniest one in the world. Did we find
the
that
Guam one?
Well, there was one before that.
We got both.
Oh, okay. Well, then that's both. Let's play Hank Johnson, who's from Atlanta, and he's a senator or is a congressman?
Congressman.
Congressman. Here's the deal. I've said I never thought adults would be this stupid. We'll play the other one first, but you hear like our representatives speak now, and you're like, oh my God, these people are dumb. Like, there is, look, Mark Garagos does a fair bit of lying, but he's definitely not dumb. There's a difference between lying for your side, yep, which both sides do, or just being dumb. And so it made me laugh because they caught up to Hank Johnson on the steps of the Capitol, and they asked him, what about Biden now in those files?
Those classified
documents. What about that?
Yeah.
Now, he's got a theory, but it's not even the theory. Listen to how he articulates the theory, and then I'll give you another clip, which is my favorite all-timer.
My response to it all is that alleged classified documents showing up allegedly in the possession of Joseph Biden, you know, I mean, there's so much that needs to be investigated, and that's what I call for, is for everything to be investigated. But I'm suspicious of the timing of it. I'm also aware of the fact that things can be planted on people.
On people.
Places and things can be planted. things can be planted in places and then discovered conveniently. That may be what has occurred here. I'm not ruling that out.
All right.
But I don't.
The whole point is he's not. First off, he can't articulate.
That's what I sound like when a teacher asks me about that book we're supposed to read, and I have no idea. I didn't read it at all.
Right. It's also his hand. He moves his hand, and he hopes that his hand will help his mouth. But the hand is looking at him, going, "What do you want me to do? You can't talk to the brain." It's like, I'm going to move my hand to make people people capable of being planted. Persons and people and places, and their boxes can be people planted on.
I'm
things.
Suspicious I'm not, of the timing.
I'm not ruling out people being planted in places with things. What? First off, what is this guy doing all day? He's making decisions and policy all fucking day, like.
His brain, though, is like, you're killing this, bud. You got this.
Yeah, I'm questioning why. Well, now, who put that there?
Nailed it.
Also, one of his aides has to stand behind the cameraman and do the wrap it up thing. Wrap it up, Hank.
And Easter Bunny needs to go to him and be like, hey, man, we got to go over there now. It's time to get out of here.
Yes, he should travel with an Easter Bunny. But his all-timer is the is him questioning the admiral about the island of Guam.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, my fear is that the whole island will become so overly populated that it will tip over and capsize.
We don't anticipate that. The Guam population, I think, currently about 175,000.
Somebody needs to do we're all enablers for Hank Johnson. The admiral should have been, what the fuck are you talking about, Holmes? You're insane?
The SS Guam?
Yes. Jesus Christ. All right, so Hank Johnson's out making decisions, everybody.
I wonder if the people were dumb when we were young and we just didn't know it, or is it...
I think that was it.
You know what I mean? And but now there's more outlets.
I think... Here's what it is. Here's what I think we're seeing. Well, I think people had more wisdom when we were younger. And I think the wisdom kind of – people were more religious and they had more wisdom. And so it sort of kept them on the – staying out of the drainage ditch of fucking retarded ideas. They stayed sort of on the pavement because – wisdom and common sense and horse sense and, you know, just like grandpa used to do it, like, you know, that kind of basic sort of American sort of roll your sleeves up and get to work, you know, like kind of a wisdom keeps people on the road. We have tons of dingbats, men and women, who are just completely not even near logic or sanity or wisdom anymore. But there's also a thing, and this is the problem, maybe Hank Johnson illustrated this, because I was talking to Dr. Drew about it, and he's like, man, these people are, they sound like idiots. Like, they sound like complete and utter idiots. Like, somebody was saying to Nancy Pelosi when everyone was tearing down statues and burning everything down, like, you think it's okay for people to just willy-nilly in the middle of the night tear down statues? People are going to do what they're going to do. It's like, that's not a leader. The leader should go, look, we should do this in an orderly fashion. Yeah. I'm not a fan of some of these Civil War generals, but we'll have a discussion and we'll safely remove it with guys wearing, like, hard hats and reflective vests, not have Heshers climb to the top of it, light on fire, pull it over. I mean, but she can't do that because it's her side is the ones that's tackling the statues. Now,
isn't that tough, though? Because if you are a Democrat or Republican, like, whatever's happening, even in your brain, you know it's wrong. You can't go against it.
Well,
you
what
have
I
to stick
yes.
to it.
So what I was saying to Drew is I gave this metaphor 2 days ago when I was talking to him. It's like, these people seem like idiots. I can't believe what they sound like. And the answer, because you can't go batshit crazy over the guy on the other side with classified documents, and then your guy 10 minutes later gets found with classified, and you go, that's a totally different... No, you have to go, I understand it's important, and, you know, I still back the man, but let's let the DOJ sort it out. And
I would love that. I would love to hear people do that. Well, that's, we all would.
Well, okay, so here's the example. Here's the example, and here's why you sound like a major league fucktard speaking into a microphone now. Both sides. Because if I said, let's just say, my wife said, hey, I came home the other night, you were sleeping, the garage door was open. You got to remember to shut that door. And I'd go, I didn't do it. I didn't do it. And then I went, I bet one of the kids did it. I bet Sonny did it. And she went, well, Sonny slept over at his friend's house last night. So, well... then Natalia, then the girl did. Well, remember, she was out of town that night. Then the nanny did it. The nanny must have, because I didn't open the garage. I didn't leave it open. I opened it, and then I shut it, and then someone else must have opened it. No, then the nanny was off that week. You know, dogs can open garage doors. I have seen. Right. You check the YouTube. You can see a dog. Like, I know the button's up high, but the dog can get up to that. Ugh. All right. So now I sound like an insane, retarded person who escaped an institution, right? Yeah. And the person you'd be talking to would go, fuck, this person's... Just fucking admit you may have left the door open. Yeah. You know what I mean? But I won't. I won't let it go. I'm going to keep it going. I'm going to keep offering alternative reasons as to why it wasn't me. And at some point, we're going to get to the dog, and then you're going to go, this adult sounds batshit crazy. That, you make yourself sound like a crazed fucking retard when you won't let it go. You have to let it go at a certain point.
I wonder if he was like that... when they did that with Trump at Mar-a-Lago. I wonder if he was like, you know, evidence can be planted. We don't know.
I'm sure we'll find a ton of footage about him with the same hot take about planting evidence.
Right, right.
All right. So that's that. What else do we got?
Well, aren't you're going to Kimmel's reunion, right?
Yes. Kimmel is doing his 20-year reunion. 20 years on Jimmy Kimmel Live.
Yeah, our very own Mike Lynch is flying out for that. Like he hit up everybody who's ever touched that show, it sounds like.
Yeah, Lynch is staying with me this weekend.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good. He's a good, thoughtful house guest. I think he stayed with me before, too. And, August is going. Everyone, I guess. It's a big deal. 20 years.
Where is
late
it?
Late night. Somewhere downtown. I don't know because there's too many new hip hot trendy whatever's downtown that I wouldn't even know. But somewhere downtown. That's all I got. So that's good. And I didn't. Jimmy's so nice. I fucked up the RSVP. You know, I can't figure out my email address or how to reply to the whatever. So he just called me.
That sounds like something you could just show up to.
I guess they're trying to get a head count. I also think Jimmy was like, well, you need to be there because I think I have the record for most appearances on that show. But the only reason I have the record for most appearances on that show is because I wrote on that show for the first several years. I don't know, 3 years? I can't remember. But he could not book any guests at the very beginning. It's impossible to book a show at the beginning. And I was always just there sitting in the writer's room. And so every time somebody couldn't get booked or dropped out or whatever, they would just say, just go in there.
I mean, you got Adam Carolla there, or you do, you know? Like,
yeah.
Hey, Adam, do you have anything on pogo sticks? And then, boom, you're just going to go off and be like,
yeah.
Well, you and Jimmy,
Chopper-oos.
You and Jimmy famously went to Snoop Dogg's house when you guys were doing the Man Show. And for the listeners, Darren Carter has like a weird connection to Snoop.
Yeah, that's real, baby boo.
What is your connection to Snoop?
I used to do, well, occasionally I still do the impression. I'd be on stage. Wow, it's a capital S. So yes, I'm fresh in double O P D core double G Y D O D. You know what I mean? I would do it, and his cousin saw me at the Improv.
You think it's a coincidence, but Snoop has 471 cousins. I mean, we all know one of his cousins, or he calls everyone cuz.
Oh, no.
It's hard to tell Snoop whether people are biologically related to you because he'd be like, my cuz is out getting chicken. My other cuz is sparking up a joint. My cuz. He calls everyone his cousin.
It's pretty safe for him to just say cuz and it would land. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So he invited me. You're right, because it's funny. I knew these two comedians. I thought they were really brothers. He's like, no, I call it. That's my brother. What's up, bro? What's up?
Right.
I really thought they were brothers. But anyways, it was Snoop Dogg. He invited me to do the family reunion. Mm-hmm. And at the time, my jokes weren't that flattering.
Wait, so his cousin just saw you at the Improv and just called Snoop like in Back to the Future, like called out his phone. Like, Snoop!
Sent out the Snoop signal.
This is the sound you've been looking for.
No, what happened was he goes, let me talk to his mom and his aunt. And because I guess Snoop's aunt was that guy's mom. So I met with, I want to say her name was Beverly, and this guy and the cousin and the aunt. And then they came out to the Ice House to come see me perform. And then afterwards, they were like, okay, perfect, you're approved. You know, it's going to be at the Reef in Long Beach, this restaurant. Come down. It'll be great. We'll pay you and blah, blah, blah. And the funny part was they said no cursing.
What?
Yeah, no cursing. Because it's all grandma's kids. My grandmama's out there. Yeah. And then they invited me back. I did it a second year.
So if there's no cursing, is marijuana allowed? Like,
yes, there was like I remember they came out of the bathroom. There was like 35 people at least came out, and just a plume of smoke. And I felt like a lot of times at that reunion that other people, it was also their first time meeting Snoop Dogg, because everybody wanted a picture and everybody wanted to
share.
Yeah,
how much time did you do?
Did about 10 minutes.
How much of it was Snoop?
A little bit in the beginning and a little at the end. And then it went great. My friend was like, he was loving you. And I was sitting next to Snoop and Warren G, afterwards. Wow. And then they invited me back the next year. I got to do it again. And he introduced me the next year.
Oh, then he brought you up. That's, That's great. Yeah, that, yeah. That must be terrifying to have an impression, then have the guy in front of you and you do the impression for him, of him.
Well, if it's...
like Bill Maher certainly loves Kyle Dunnigan's impression of him.
Right. Well, if it's Nathan Lane, I wouldn't be that intimidated by it. But Snoop Dogg could be packing. One of his cousins could get offended. That's all. All right. I think Nick Blood, actor, is in our waiting room. He's zooming in, so we'll talk to him about his. Well, he's done everything, so I got a lot to talk to him about.